this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 61. This is Thursday, March 15th, that I'm finally getting around to recording this, and it's daylight savings time again in America. And so I got this email. I'm clicking back over to it on my phone. Very high tech over here. I got this email this week from Graham Seabrook from the Postpartum Mama. She sends a weekly newsletter, and she just somehow knows how to get inside my head and say the things that I need to hear. And this was something that she wrote. To all my U.S. mamas, I'm sorry. Today is one of the worst Mondays of the year, the first of daylight savings time. The point of DST was for us all to get more productive hours of the day. Heaven forbid we aren't producing. What it does instead is create a nation full of cranky adults and children for weeks. It turns out that an hour is a long time and our bodies don't adjust well, if at all, to being told that they do not know what they know. We each have an internal clock, and right now mine is pissed off. This is a lesson about more than DST. There are so many times that we value production over rest, that we do not listen to our bodies, that we teach our children to do the same. Sometimes we do it because it is the only way for us to survive. Usually we do it because our society doesn't value rest, creativity, daydreaming, serenity, silence, or play. It values production. So I know it's Thursday of daylight saving time, but for those of you who are still struggling, this is me now talking as Courtney. I'm not reading from Graham. But for those of you who are still struggling with the adjustment, please be kind and gentle to yourself, because daylight saving time, it just sucks. Like, can't we just pick a time of day and just stick with it? You know, like, we can move everything around a half hour, or just pick one and stick to it, and we will figure it out, and we can all, like, adjust our body rhythms. And Graham went on to have more, and she had some great ideas for surviving daylight savings time this week, and I just love her work so much. So I would recommend heading over to thepostpartummama.org, and you can sign up for her newsletter and just get these free bits of wisdom in your inbox every week. I love it. I don't read most of the newsletters I get, and I've unsubscribed to a lot of them because there's only so much that we can read in, you know, any day or week. But I do read Graham's, and I love them, and I love her wisdom. This week on the show, we have Kelly. And I am not going to try to pronounce her last name, because for those of you who have been listening to the show for a while, you know that pronunciation is not one of my superpowers. It is, in fact, my kryptonite. So, Kelly, and her last name is spelled T-H-O-E-L-E, and I think for most of us, that's probably something really easy to pronounce, but that T-H sound has always tripped me up, so I am not going to even try, because I'm sorry, Kelly, I should have had you coach me on how to pronounce your name before we got off the phone. Kelly has just such a great energy that she brings to today's story, and she had pregnancy depression and postpartum depression. She had no idea that she had pregnancy depression. This is just hindsight being 2020 and looking back at having, she had the sort of pregnancy where, like, one day she puked 40 times, and I'm like, wow, respect, because I thought I had bad morning sickness, but I'm certain I never puked 40 times in one day. And I was in the ER when I was pregnant with Pippa for morning sickness. So I do know, like, or was it with Julian? Oh crap, I can't remember. I have been hospitalized for morning sickness. I think it was Julian. Yeah, I ate an In-N-Out burger because I knew the morning sickness was coming and I wanted to have one final fast food hamburger, and it made me puke and I could not stop puking, and then I had to be hospitalized that morning. That's right. So I've been hospitalized for morning sickness, but never 40 times. So respect, Kelly, T-H-O-E-L-E. Not going to pronounce it. Okay. Okay, that's enough mispronouncing and stumbling over words for me. Next week, I'll be back with a me episode, and I'll update you on the book, which is ridiculously close to being published. If you follow me on Facebook, you've seen the book cover. If you don't, I don't have a square graphic, so I haven't posted on Instagram, but the book is ridiculously close to being published. And I have some other exciting things going on in my life. Like, I just scheduled an appointment with a naturopathic doctor. So that appointment is next Tuesday. So I think I'll go there and see how it goes. And then I'll come back and give you guys, like, a meaty episode on, I hate the word meaty. Why did I just say that? Oh my gosh. I mean, It was the word that came to mind, but that's just one of those words that always kind of makes me go, ooh, creepy, meaty. Like, meat is meaty. Like, an episode is not meaty. It has no flesh. Okay, gross. I think that is enough rambling for me, because I will ramble aplenty with you next week. But for now, I'm going to turn it over to Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And who else do we have on the show today?
We have Marley in the background. My daughter just turned one last weekend, and she is very clingy today, so you're probably going to hear her from time to time.
And I love it, as we were talking off the air. I just love for other moms out there to hear some mom real life.
Yes.
Not
well,
that
she's going to help contribute to the real life today.
So she just turned one.
She did.
So did your postpartum journey start, like, around the time she was born or before?
Well, it's funny. You know, had you asked me, like, immediately after I had her, if I had had, you know, wow, did you have any kind of depression during your pregnancy? I would have said, oh my gosh, no. But now, reflecting back on it, my problems started in pregnancy. They started way before that. I'm 30, and when I was in high school and in college, I had a really bad experience with depression. And I was very fortunate. I had a great doctor. And I started on Lexapro when I was about 16 and was on it for several years and found a lot of relief with just traditional therapy, and Lexapro was awesome. So I actually weaned myself with my doctor. Weaned myself off of the medication. I'd been on it for like 6 years or so. And at that time, I moved from St. Louis to Florida. I work for Disney World, and had moved to the Orlando area. And I thought things were great. You know, it was like, wow, that happened to me a long, long time ago, but that was just a chapter in my story and it's done. And then, you know, my husband and I had some difficulty getting pregnant, and I kind of chalked my negative feelings during pregnancy to that, you know, like, man, I wanted to be pregnant so bad, and being pregnant sucks. All these women who were like, oh my God, I could be pregnant my whole life. I'm like, yeah, screw you. I hated it. I had about like a month of time that was really, really great, but the rest of it, I was vomiting uncontrollably. Like, the worst day, I peed 40 times in one day, and I just was like, oh Lord, just end it all, this is the worst. So I had this guilt, like, all I wanted to do was be pregnant, and now I'm pregnant and it sucks, you know. And my skin was really bad, and I ate everything under the sun, because when I could eat, I was starving, and then I puke it up. And I work on my feet a lot, so I was just, like, really exhausted. So throughout my pregnancy, I just thought I was a negative Nancy, and, like, you know, that was that. But after I had my daughter, it was just a few weeks after she was born, and it just, like, hit me like a ton of bricks. And I now, like, looking back a year out, I'm like, holy crap. In pregnancy, I was suffering from depression, and I didn't even know it. You know, I was just so out of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Crazy to think about.
So when you say it hit you like a ton of bricks, or do we want to back up, like, how was labor and delivery for you?
Oh, God. Okay, so I say this, like, I get other people had it way, way worse, and I know that, and I struggle with that guilt because I'm always bitching about how hard my life is, and it's really not. I know this, but I just have a hard time, like, recognizing, hey, you know, other people also went through it, you're going to be fine. So through my pregnancy, I was, like, totally thinking I would be one of those moms who went into the hospital, you know, my water would break at home, I would labor at home as long as humanly possible, and then I would get to the hospital, and with these, you know, loving eyes, I would look at my husband, and I would say, I think I'm ready to push, and then my baby would come out, and it would just be this magical experience. Well, it was freaking nothing like that. Other than being sick a lot and being on medication my entire pregnancy, I was on Fenugreek for the morning sickness. Other than that, I didn't have like high blood pressure or any other kind of pregnancy complications, so I was otherwise very healthy in pregnancy. And we went in for, you know, some, I think it was like at our 20-week routine ultrasound, and they said, hey, so your baby's measuring a little bit smaller, like on the smaller end. And I didn't think that was anything concerning because I was 5 pounds, 4 ounces in full term, and my husband was 6'7" in full term. So we didn't expect to have like a 13-pounder by any means. But it was kind of concerning that our daughter was behind where she should have been. So we were ordered for additional scans, and we came back, I think it was like 4 or 5 times for additional ultrasounds. And when I was at 36 weeks, they said, hey, if, you know, we're going to do one more round at 39 weeks, and if she hasn't made some significant growth, we're going to induce you. Just because, you know, if she's not growing, then we assume that that means it's not really a hospitable environment. We want to get her out. So at 39 weeks, went in, they said everything looks great. I did a membrane sweep and was sent home, and this was on a Wednesday. So on Thursday, I go to work, I'm doing my thing. I come back to my office, and I had like 10 missed calls from my OB's office. So I called them back, and I tried to figure out, you know, hey, why are you stalking me? And they said, hey, so we screwed up. We read your overall ultrasound growth, and it looked good, but when we take a look at the individual measurements, your daughter has not made improvements. We want to get you in, and we want to induce you.
Jeez.
I said, okay. And I said, well, when do you want to do it? And they said, right now. And I said, but I have stuff. I have a meeting in like 3 minutes. They said, yeah, we don't really care. So I very stupidly still was like, well, I have stuff to do. I actually had a cast member who was retiring after 45 years with the company, and I told him that I would go to his party. So I'm walking across the lawn to go to this party, and I thought I peed my pants, but it was actually part of my water breaking. And I went to the party, I ate some cake, and then I said, yeah, I gotta bounce because I'm gonna go have my baby. So I called my husband, and I was like, hey, let's meet at the hospital. He said, well, why don't we meet at home, because I don't want you to drive. So loaded up in the car, went up to the hospital. I was a direct admit. They said, yeah, my water had broken, but it was just a tiny, like a pinhole way at the top. So they were gonna just kind of let me labor. And I got started on Pitocin right away, and I was feeling great. I was feeling awesome. So we checked in. It was like 5:30 that evening. Everything was great. I had no issues. And I am thinking, oh, this is going to be exactly like I imagined it. I don't even have pain. All these people talking about how labor is the worst pain ever. This is great. And I was bouncing my little stupid ball. And then they came in and said, well, we really want to break your water fully because we think that'll progress things. Okay. So it was about 8 centimeters, and they broke my water, and it was this massive flooding of horrific fluid. And I'm like, that was inside of me all this time? Good God. And immediately I started having the worst labor pains in my back, and I went from being like calm, cool, and collected to, Mitch, you need to get me an epidural right now. And he's like, oh, yes, okay, whatever you need, sweetheart. And I ended up getting an epidural just a few minutes later. And then, I mean, it was like night and day, and I felt awesome. And I believe I gave a thumbs up, and my sisters were recording me, and I have this really stupid video floating around with me, like, with my thumbs up, and I'm like, we need to get this for the house, because I'm a moron. And everything was great. And I said to Mitch, I said, oh, man, I feel a lot of pressure, like I need to push. And so we got the nurse, and they said, well, that's impossible. We literally just did your epidural, you know, like 15 minutes ago. And she goes to check, because I asked her, you know, can we just have the doctor or somebody come and check, though? And she goes to check, and she says, oh, you're crowning. Okay, yep, it's time. Let's push the baby out. And I said, you know everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, I got to push this kid out. So I did 3 pushes. Things were awesome, and then they immediately weren't. All of a sudden, you know, alarms and stuff are going off, and a whole bunch of people came in the room, and they gave me a shot to stop the contractions. They took me off the Pitocin. They rolled me over to my side, and I'm very confused as to what's happening. And I look over at my husband, who's normally the most calm person ever, and there's panic in his face. And my midwife said, so we can't get the baby's heartbeat. We don't know why. You know, we're trying a couple different kind of monitors, but the baby doesn't have a heartbeat right now. If we can't get a heartbeat in the next 90 seconds, you're going to have a C-section. And I just kind of laid there like, I didn't even read up about C-sections. Like, which way did they cut you? You know, I don't even know. Holy moly. And 90 seconds later, my daughter was born. They just wheeled us in. I was very fortunate. I had a spinal tap, successful the first go, because they said, hey, if this doesn't take, you're going to go under general anesthesia, but you'll wake up and your baby will be here. And I didn't even have time to like process what was happening, because, you know, a minute and a half before I was pushing. And she was born, she was perfectly healthy. They don't know what the problem was, other than my epidural went into a blood vessel when it was inserted, so they think maybe that caused some problems for her and for me. But she was like a 9 on the Apgar score. She came out squawking, and she hasn't stopped since. But I mean, it was a totally weird, surreal experience. And it just happened very, very quickly, and then it was done. And it was just like, wow, that is not what I was expecting to happen at all. And I kind of disassociated myself from everything at that point. You know, it was just really hard to process, because, you know, my mom had 6 babies naturally. One of my sisters had 4 babies naturally. My other sister had ended up having a C-section after failure to progress, but, you know, it wasn't an emergency C-section by any means. I was ill-prepared. And, you know, so the after that, everything was just kind of like, I felt like it was almost in a fog. Like, this isn't supposed to happen to me. That's not what I planned. I didn't read that part of the book. I didn't research how to do anything when they cut you open. You know, here I was, like, at home, I had all these pads filled with witch hazel to put in my underwear, and I wasn't going to need any of it, because I didn't have a vaginal birth, and I was just laying there thinking, like, oh my god, everything I've ever planned and thought of, like, my Pinterest board is not right now, like, what am I going to do? And it was just so odd, and so everything, I think, just kind of culminated like a couple weeks later, and that's when it really got bad for me.
Well, I'm feeling all sorts of, like, you're telling your story, and I just feel a rush of adrenaline, like, oh my gosh, no heartbeat, like, how do you even, like, deal with that sort of stress? Like, so I'm feeling the stress, and I wasn't even there.
Yeah, and honestly, like, my job is a very stressful job, and I'm very good at kind of like taking the stress of the situation and moving, you know, almost as if I were to say, okay, I'm going to take this and move it over here and deal with the immediate issue, and then later I'll come back and deal with the emotional parts of that stress. And I feel like maybe that's what I did. It was just so crazy, because, you know, I'm just laying there, and all of a sudden, everything that I ever thought would happen didn't happen. And my poor husband, who is I know everybody says they have the best husband, but they're lying, because I have the best husband. Everybody else can be tied for second, but my husband is thebomb.com, and he is, like, my total rock, and he's my support in every way. And just looking at him and imagining how he felt, thinking, oh my god, there's a potential that I'm not going to lose, like, my baby or my wife, but that I could lose both of them right now. And just seeing him look scared freaked me out. And I didn't even talk to him. I just looked at him, and then I looked away, because I knew if I looked at him and made eye contact with him, I would just lose my shit. So it was just so crazy, is the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
So it came to a head a couple of weeks later. How did that happen?
Yeah, I had, so after the C-section, it's took a while for them to get me all sewn up. I had a little bit of, it wasn't like a major complication or anything, but I had a few complications because the surgery had happened so quickly. So I was very delayed in being able to do skin to skin with my daughter, which also was a disappointment for me because that was something I was looking forward to doing pretty much immediately. So it was several hours later when I got to put her, like I got to meet her, you know, a few minutes after the surgery, but it was several hours until I could have some time, you know, just holding her and looking at her and bonding with her. And it was several hours after that until I was able to attempt breastfeeding. She, without sucking, because that would have been helpful had she sucked, she was a pain in my ass with breastfeeding. She would not latch. We had significant difficulty. So that was just driving me bonkers. We didn't get any sleep in the hospital. A whole bunch of, you know, the whole, just everything coming to a head at the hospital. I was recovering. We weren't getting sleep. She wouldn't eat. All of that. So when we finally got home, things were okay for a little while. My mother came to visit, and she was a huge help. And then after she left, my husband's back at work, and I'm at home by myself with the baby. And I just, you know, when my mom was here, every time she would take Marley, she would take her and she would go change her diaper, and she would, and a 2 second diaper change would turn into a 15 minute ordeal because my mom would have her on the changing table and she'd be laying over her and looking down at her little eyes and, you know, singing a song and talking about, you're just such a special baby and you're going to be so smart and we love you so much. And my mom's obsessed with this baby. And I go to change her, and it's just a routine, and it was a job. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, lucky, you know, I have this beautiful baby who I get to care for. It was, oh, I have this baby I have to care for, and I wasn't bonding with her at all. I couldn't wait until my husband came home. I would count down the hours, and my sister lived with us at the time. She was saving up to go to school, and she was working full-time as a server, so she had crazy hours, and she would wake up, and she would just kind of watch me go through the motions, and she knew pretty early on, like, hey, there's something going on here, and I didn't realize it, but I just started disassociating myself from her, from my daughter, and I don't think I said her name to anyone. I would say, yeah, the baby. And at one point I just recognized, oh shit, I love my daughter, but I'm not in love with my daughter. And that was just heartbreaking.
You really just helped clarify something for me because, like I do a mom to mom support group over here in Pasadena, and there was a mom who used to come like 2 years ago, and she never said her kids' names, and it bugged me, but I couldn't put a finger on it. And just hearing you, like, you know, say how it was like a disassociating and not saying your daughter's name, that's like for me, it's like confirmation, like, okay, that was something going on, because I sensed in my gut that like she would refer to brother and baby, and there were two of them, but never say the kid's name. I'm like, there is something up here.
There's something up. Yeah, well, you're right. You know, I would text, even texting, you know, my parents about her or my sisters or other friends, you know, I would just say, oh, yeah, she, or yeah, the baby's been crying or whatever. And I never said Marley. And I guess it just made me. It just made me realize, like, oh, crap, like, this is a person. This isn't an inconvenience. Like, this is a whole person, and I wanted this baby so bad. How come I'm not in love with her?
Right.
You know, everybody else is. Everybody else is.
Well, and you've been through a terrible pregnancy and then an awful C-section, so, like, it makes sense. But going that you would be, like, just needing time to heal. But I'm sure experiencing that, and for you, processing all those feelings just must be awful.
It was. guilty too, because, you know, you should never compare yourself to anybody else. I know that, and I know that in my head, and I know that in my heart, but, you know, my oldest sister has 4 kids. I was there for the birth of her number 3 and number 4, her son and her youngest daughter, and I watched her bounce back. Like, the same day she had my niece and nephew, she was up, she was eating. I watched her do dishes the day she came home. I mean, she was just like the mom who gets up and is like, okay, we had a baby, now let's get back to mommy, you know. And she is like, she juggles it all so well. And I thought, that's gonna be me, you know. That's how my mom is. That's how my sisters are. That's what I'm going to be like. And we came home from the hospital, and I couldn't sit on the toilet by myself. I had to have my husband come and lower me on the toilet so I could pee. And I just sat there in tears. Like, I am so independent. I don't want anybody helping me ever with anything. And I can't even pee alone. And how the hell am I supposed to take care of a person if I can't even pee?
That is, like, I can't even, I had a C-section with my second. I can't even imagine needing my husband to help me pee.
Oh, it was pretty rough. My husband and I, like, way back in the day, I used to not even, like, fart in front of my husband, you know, because I was like, oh, that's not what we're going to do. And then I was like, hey, Mitch, you need to help lower me on the toilet because I have to poop. And he's like, hey, I think the honeymoon period's over. I'm like, yeah, man, it's gone. It's gone.
So when did you... I assume you got help.
I did, yeah. So for the first 6 weeks, I couldn't drive. I couldn't do anything. So I kind of just hung out at home, wallowing in my sorrow. And I realized something's up. And I had a scheduled appointment at 6 weeks to go back and have my... you know, have my normal 6-week post-op appointment with my doctor and my midwife. And my doctor wasn't available that day, so I met with one of the midwives in the practice, which was fine because I had met with all of the MDs and the midwives in the practice throughout my pregnancy, so I was really comfortable with all of them. And the one midwife, you know, they do the standard screening for postpartum depression. And as they were asking me the questions, I just started sobbing. And, you know, we talked through it, and she said, well, I definitely think you have postpartum depression, and it sounds like you've got some postpartum anxiety, but, you know, before we start any medication, your hormones are really out of whack. Why don't we just monitor things? You know, you've been in through therapy before. Do you feel confident that you'll be able to manage? And I was like, yeah, sure, okay. So they sent me home with nothing, and... in retrospect, I should have said to my husband, don't let me leave this appointment without a prescription for something, and don't let me leave without making a follow-up appointment that's like 2 weeks later. But I didn't. So between 6 and 12 weeks, things went from really bad to horrific. I started like lying to people. People would start texting and saying, hey, how are you? What's going on? I just wouldn't respond. I would look at my phone and I would feel sick. Like, oh God, I don't want to talk to that person. And it might have been somebody I really, really like and care about, but I just didn't want to deal with anybody. And, you know, I would just go through the motions. My house, I started getting weirdly obsessed about the dishes in the sink. I didn't give a shit that the rest of the house looked like a goddamn disaster war zone, but if there was a dish in the sink, it would start to make my skin crawl. We would eat dinner, and then my husband would take his bowl and go put it in the sink, and I would be like, oh my God, I'm probably going to murder him in his sleep, because how dare he put that in the sink? The sink needs to stay clean at all times. Like, but there's a cat hair tumbleweed in the middle of the kitchen floor, and there's, you know, Doritos crushed into the carpet. But I'm very strangely obsessing about, you know, my sink and all of that weird crap. And I started having really bad nightmares. I had had nightmares in high school and college and throughout my, like, young adult life. they'll come and go. Sometimes I would have bad sleeping periods, and then they would go away. But these were so realistic, and when I would wake up, I almost wanted them to be true. I had had a dream where someone had killed themselves. They wanted to jump off of a building, and for whatever reason, I had to be the person to kind of talk them down, and I couldn't give them a reason to live. And the person jumped, and then I jumped right after him. And I woke up, and I was crying, and I wasn't crying because it was a terrible, horrible dream. I was crying because I woke up, because it wasn't real. And I was thinking, oh, that's not good. That I know that's not good. That's not a rational thought. That's not a healthy thought. But I don't want to be alive. I don't want to kill myself necessarily, but I almost want somebody to do it for me. And then we'd be driving down the road, and I'd be, you know, sitting in my car at a stoplight, and I would have these visions almost like, you know, did you ever see the Final Destination movies?
No, I didn't. But okay, you can ruin them for us.
Terrible, horrible acting, horrible plot line, whole thing shit. But I love them. I watched them all the time when I was in like high school and college with my dad and my sisters. Again, terrible acting, terrible plot, the whole thing's crap. So you should definitely watch it.
Yeah. Great endorsement.
Yeah, I know, right? Basically, this guy has these premonitions of things, and then they happen. And he can see something unfolding, and it's just terrible situation, and then it happens. And it was almost like that. I'd be sitting at a stoplight, and I would have my hands on the steering wheel, and I would just almost, like, just be transported, you know, 30 seconds ahead, and I would be imagining that a huge semi wouldn't be able to stop. And I have nowhere to go because I'm in the middle lane of traffic and I can't move in front of me. I can't go behind. And all of a sudden, this semi is just going to smack into me and my little Ford Focus is going to crumble like an accordion and I'm going to die. But I hope that Marley lives. I just don't want to live through it. And I'm like, oh, shit, that's not good, you know? And then I'd be at the grocery store and I'm like, well, what if I just leave? What if I just don't come back home? I love my husband. I love my baby. I love my life. I love my friends. My family's awesome. But I don't love this. This sucks. I didn't sign up for this, and I don't want to do it anymore. And I would think, well, how much money do we have in our account? We have a lot, so I could take it, and I could just go. Where would I go? I don't know, you know. But I would start imagining this, and then I would kind of snap out of it and be like, what the hell am I doing? And I slept, like, horribly. I mean, I slept for shit. It was absolutely terrible. And when I did sleep, I had these terrible nightmares, so I didn't want to go to bed. And then I'd wake up and I was just drained. And when I would get in the shower, I would just sit there and just sob and sob and sob. And I couldn't put my finger on it. Why am I so upset? Why am I crying? What's my problem? What's wrong with me? You know, and the famous, what do you have to be depressed about? You know, there's somebody who has a way worse than you, Kelly. And it just kept going over and over and over in my mind. Like, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. And randomly, I saw on Facebook, like in my newsfeed, somebody had posted about when the bout breaks. All I ever did was lay in bed and nurse my baby and, you know, watch Full House. So I figured, oh, I'll watch this documentary. And I put it on and I sat there with my jaw was just dropped. My mouth was hanging wide open and I'm watching it and I felt sick because I was like, oh my God, I feel like all of these women. And there's a part where Kelly Martinez is a mom who had tragically taken her life, and her husband is interviewed in the film, and he talks about his wife, and he talks about her, and says things, you know, that I assume maybe somebody would say about me if I weren't around. He said things, you know, like Kelly was friendly, people liked her, she was vibrant. I would hope that those are things people say about me. Maybe not. I don't know. But he said these things, and you know, you can hear him about hear somebody talk about someone in that way, and you can almost imagine, oh, if that were me, is that what people would say? But then for him to say, my wife, Kelly, just to hear my name in that conversation really kind of woke me up and made me think, I don't want my husband to ever have to give an interview like that. I don't want my daughter to ever say, yeah, my mom died when I was a little baby because she didn't get help. You know, she didn't get... she's clearly got an opinion on this topic.
Yeah, she wants you here too.
Yeah, she's like, hi guys, I'm still here. Don't forget about me. But, you know, I don't ever want to put my husband through that. I don't ever want my baby to say, yeah, I never got the chance to meet my mom. And I was starting to fantasize about not being around. And it kind of scared me because I'm like, well, what's the next step? Am I going to think, wow, that is such a good plan. Let's do it. Because I'm the kind of person, if I get a good idea and I think this is what we should do, I just go ahead and do it. So it just terrified me. And my husband came home and I was sobbing. And he's like, what is wrong? And I told him, I said, I watched this documentary. I'm really worried that I'm going to go from being like, there's something wrong with me, number one, if you haven't figured it out. And number two, I'm worried that I'm going to go from being really, 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 really sad to really, really, like, just over the top, inconsolable, and that I'm going to do something to hurt myself, or I'm just going to fucking leave. And I don't want anything to happen. And after I watched the film, it was like an hour between when it ended and when my husband got home, I had called PSI, because at the very end, they list the PSI 1 line on the screen, and I called and I left a message, and in tears. I mean, I was just a blubbering mess, and I can't even remember what I said, but it was probably something like, I need help, there's something wrong, I know I need help, I'm overwhelmed, please help me. My husband got home, and we called my OB, called the office, and making that phone call and having to say out loud, like, you know, the nurse answered, her name's Wendy, and she's like, hi, you know, do you want to make an appointment? And she's like, what do you need the appointment for? And I just lost it, and I said, I don't want to kill myself, and I don't want to hurt my baby, but I feel really, really bad, and I know this happens to moms. I don't want to be one of those moms. And she said, okay, what are you okay right now? Like, and, you know, she started asking all these questions, and I said, yes, my husband's home, you know, okay. And I had an appointment the next morning, and I went to see my OB, and she was awesome. And she sat with me for about 45 minutes and held my hand and gave me a hug, and we cried together, and she is just the coolest OB in existence. Her name is Mary Beth Lewis Boardman, and I adore her. And she said, okay, well, this changes today. And it did. That was the turning point, and I was exactly like 12 weeks and 4 days or something postpartum. And that's when I started back up on Lexapro. And man, I mean, days later, I felt like I was a human again. It was incredible.
I'm not responding quickly because I'm crying over here.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good to cry about these things. I actually was crying because when you said that your OB sat with you for 45 minutes. Like,
oh yeah, because most OBs, it's like, oh, 17 minutes is like the longest appointment I've ever had, and that was like getting an entire exam plus questions plus, you know, whatever. No, she's the coolest OB to ever live, and I adore her. She's the coolest person. And, I mean, she's someone who gets it, and she gave me a whole list of people to, like, a referral list for therapists and psychiatrists, and she's a mom herself. You know, she's got a teenage daughter and a teenage son, preteen son, and She's just a cool person, and she's just so caring, and I'm very fortunate that I have her in my corner, because if I didn't, if I had another person who just said, oh, well, you know, let's just, this is normal, this is the baby blues, you know, this is what happens to people. No, this shit doesn't happen to everybody. It happens to way too many women, but this is not normal.
Right, it's common, but not normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Or common, but unacceptable.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we shouldn't settle. You shouldn't feel like wanting to die during your maternity leave. You know, I mean, everybody's like, oh my God, having all this time off, that must be a dream. Like, no, it was a fucking nightmare. But thanks for checking. You know, it was terrible. And then one day it wasn't, because I swear, if I hadn't had Lexapro, I don't know what would have happened, but Lexapro was such a change in the game for me. I mean, I became a person again, and oh my God, God bless the makers of Lexapro.
So when did you go, how much longer was your maternity leave after that point?
I am incredibly fortunate. I had a lengthy maternity leave. I was off for 4 months, and then I returned to work the weekend after Independence Day. So it was like July 7th or 8th is when I went back to work.
Did going back to work help too?
It did. It was funny because it gave me a lot of anxiety. I had a lot of worry about going back to work just because of the nature of my job. It is incredibly stressful, high energy, very guest facing at Walt Disney World. It's a ton of fun. It's a really, really great gig, but it is very, very stressful, lots of responsibility. And I was nervous about, you know, I'm breastfeeding, so how's pumping at Walt going to be? What's that going to look like? But I found, other than the very first day when I left her, I did cry when I got in my car and left. But as soon as I got to work, I was welcomed by so many amazing people who were excited to see me, who wanted to hear all about Marley, who wanted to hear about me. And I, for the first time in about 4 months, was needed for my brain. Somebody asked me a question about something, and I said, oh, I know the answer. And it's this or this or this. And it wasn't a hard question, but it wasn't an easy question. And I knew the answer. And I missed being needed for something other than for breastfeeding and for calming a baby down. And I love breastfeeding and I love being able to calm my baby down, but I loved being needed for something else. And being back at work, although, again, don't want to downplay the fact that it is very high stress and significant responsibility. It has been awesome. Being needed and being able to have time where I can contribute and feel like an individual outside, have an identity outside of just being Marley's mom, that has been so important for me. It has helped a lot. The sleep has been tough. My schedule isn't the same every single day or every single week, but it has been, you know, what that has taken away in terms of, like, structure, I have gotten back from just being needed.
So, did you just say the sleep is tough?
Yeah, sleep is tough, because I don't have, like, a standard, like, 9-to-5 job, so my work hours fluctuate.
Okay.
So that's a little difficult.
And so sleep is tough for you because of work?
Yes.
Not because of depression, you know, or anxiety?
Marley is kind of an asshole. I believe we discussed that at the beginning of the show. But she actually is doing okay sleeping-wise now.
I like how you're able to call your daughter an asshole and yet say it with all the love. Like,
well, I mean, she learned from the best. I think I was probably the worst child ever. My parents said I didn't sleep more than an hour at a time until I was a year old. So she comes by it honest.
Okay.
It's not her fault. I mean, she's cut from the cloth. She is so much fun. Like, she is a total little diva, and she's got so much personality.
part of her personality makes her an asshole, absolutely. But I love her. I mean, I wouldn't want her to be anything but what she is.
Are you still breastfeeding?
I am. I'm actually breastfeeding as we speak. It's the only way to get her to be quiet.
Oh, look at I think this is our first time we've had a guest breastfeeding during the interview.
Oh, well, Marley is, she loves milk, and she is currently trying to do acrobatic moves. I've got her in one hand, and she's got her left leg up by my ear, and her right leg is on my knee. So I don't know how she is able to do this, but...
And I love that.
Future Olympian.
I love hearing this because I think there's a lot of misinformation about being able to take medications and continue breastfeeding.
Oh yeah, that was a huge concern of mine. You know, nobody wants to harm their baby or even consider harming their baby. You know, I mean, I have friends who are like, "Oh my gosh, we only feed organic, da 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 da," and that's awesome. That's not for me, but that's awesome that moms feel that way. And those same moms, I want them to understand, like, you can still take medication that, and the transfer to your milk is so negligible. And even if it does transfer, the benefits far outweigh the risks. I mean, and it helped me enjoy breastfeeding more. Once I finally, and we had a hard time with breastfeeding. I mean, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I've downplayed that pretty significantly in this interview, but it was the hardest thing I have ever done. And I've done a lot of hard stuff. I finally, you know, my mom helped. She was such, I mean, my mom was like a lifesaver. And between her and I actually had a lactation consultant come to the house. Her name's Amy Bassett. She just got her ID. I don't remember the name, but it's the international certification for lactation consultants. She came and she solved like so many problems for me, but I had a lot of problems with breastfeeding, and once I was able to actually calm down and Lexapro helped me just kind of get out of my head so much and relax, she had no problems breastfeeding and I had no problems breastfeeding. We went from having, I had a couple clogged ducts, I couldn't get, I mean, I had, when I first started breastfeeding, man, I had to sit on my couch with 17 pillows, I had my feet propped up on a damn toolbox, I had to have, you know, my water within X arm's reach, and my husband had to come by every 4 minutes to help adjust something. And now, literally, my child will breastfeed and, like, do a 360-degree turn if she needs to, because she's just that comfortable, because I'm that comfortable. And I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, babies are going to feed off of their mother's, not really like aura, but really just like, if you're chill, your baby's going to be a little more chill. And if you're high strung, your baby's going to be high strung, because your baby's feeding off your energy. And I believe that completely, because I went from being a super high-strung, freaked-out, anxious mom all the time to pretty chill now, you know? And she's pretty chill now, too.
Yeah, Pippa, too, went from being a very, it felt like a very challenging baby, and then at the four-month mark, when I got my help, as soon as I turned around, you know, we'd start going to baby classes, and she was just the chill, easy baby who would nap anywhere and, like, literally fall asleep on my legs and, like, was just very easygoing, and it was just night and day.
Yeah, it's almost like a light switch, you know? And you're like, is this the same baby?
Yeah, it really was.
That was for us, too. I mean, a really great friend of mine, her name's Amy, she came over early on, and I told her, I said, you know, my child screams all the time. She said, that's okay, you know, and she came over, and she's like, you're right, Marley is an asshole, and I said, I told you, and now, she said, it's so funny, I can't believe she's the same baby, because she's so chill now, and she wasn't at all in the beginning, but she is, she's so much fun now, she's so relaxed, she just has a blast everywhere she goes, and she's the same, she falls asleep in the car, and, you know, she's just a happy little girl.
When you started, you went back on Lexapro. Did you do anything else for treatment? Like, did you see a therapist or?
I am seeing a therapist now. I didn't at the beginning. I don't know why I didn't. I think part of it was I didn't even think that I was in a good enough headspace to talk to someone. I needed to get my chemicals
organized to start. I just couldn't really function. And I guess I felt a lot of guilt and shame. And I don't know why. Because if I were to break my leg and they said, okay, so you need to go to physical therapy so you can learn to walk again, and you need to have this cast, I would have said, okay, cool. So why is that any different with mental health? You know, I don't know why it's different, but it was for me, and that's something that I'm trying to like fight now. But I didn't see anyone until very recently. I started seeing someone, and she's great. I wish I had started seeing her earlier, because even in just like a few sessions, I was able to use some coping techniques. So when I was having some intrusive thoughts kind of back up, I could deal with them and I could kind of get out of that headspace and realize I don't need to be worried about that. That's not real. That's an irrational thought, and move past it. And I didn't have to focus on it for hours on end like I had been doing. So it's really a shame that I didn't get with somebody before I did, but I'm glad that I am seeing someone now.
I just love hearing how different our journeys are, and how it's not like there's a perfect map for any of us to follow, because a lot of guests have to give up breastfeeding, but then there's you breastfeeding during the interview, and some need the medications and others don't, and they're all different medications. So I love hearing all the differences in our journeys.
Yeah, it is fascinating. It's so true. There's not a one-size-fits-all answer, but the answer is getting help, whatever that looks like. You know,
yes.
I know somebody who didn't do any kind of therapy or medication, and she changed her diet and took up like yoga and meditation and was able to get into a really good headspace. And I mean, I think that's pretty awesome too. Not for me, it wouldn't have worked, but for her, it was great. And, you know, on the contrary, had she tried to, you know, take Lexapro, that might have been terrible for her.
Right.
You know, so it's just so important for people to find what works for you in your situation, because your situation is different. And even if you said, yep, I had a terrible pregnancy and I had an emergency C-section and I had postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety and was later diagnosed with postpartum with PTSD, our journeys, while very similar, are totally different. Even still, even with all of that,
mm-hmm.
your treatment plan could be totally different than mine. It could be identical, but it's still going to be different.
You're going to have a different obstetrician, a different significant
exactly.
other, different support yeah. team. So, we're all just bringing in different experiences. Do you feel what did you know about postpartum depression going into this, having done Lexapro before? Were you on alert, or did it just seem like that was a chapter of your life that was over?
So I was on alert. I actually had been really nervous to get pregnant. We were trying to get pregnant. We had been trying for a while, and I sat in the car at least 2.5 years ago. My younger sister was getting married, and I had gone with her for a dress fitting, and she looked gorgeous. And it was just such a wonderful day, and we were sitting in my car talking about my other sister, talking about something, and Hannah had asked about getting pregnant. You know, when do you think it's going to happen? When do you think it's going to happen? And I just broke down in tears, and I said, I'm really afraid of postpartum depression. I'm really afraid of it. And she said, well, we're here for you. You know, if you do end up developing that, like, you've got a good support network, we're here for you. We're going to take care of you, you know? And because all I knew about postpartum depression was what you read on the news or what you see, you know, these moms who drive their minivans into the ocean, and Andrea Yates, who drowns her 5 children in a bathtub, and the societal, like, shock and disgust with these kinds of women, because that's how I felt about them before I knew anything differently. And I didn't know, you know, I thought, oh, there's the baby blues where you feel sad and cry for a couple days, and then postpartum depression is when you want to kill your baby or you want to kill yourself. And I didn't realize that there was this whole freaking spectrum in between those two. And I just didn't know. And
I had been on medication before. I did understand about depression. I firsthand dealt with it, you know. There's just not enough understanding. There's not enough awareness about what postpartum depression is. What about, you know, these perinatal mood disorders and how different they are. And, you know, of course, the ones that get the most time and attention are the shocking stories. But those, that's not the norm of the women who are going through postpartum depression. You know, a lot of them are filled with rage and anger. And I was raging out against my husband for stupid shit. Like, why did you put that spoon in the sink? You know, and I mean, he's like the coolest guy in the world. And here I am pissed at him because he's putting a spoon in my sink. You know, but that's part of postpartum depression. That's part of postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD. Like, you know, nobody knows about that stuff. So even though I feel like I was more familiar with postpartum depression than like an average person, I still was so misinformed. I still didn't have a clue.
Thank you. Helps me with, because I didn't have a clue. I had the same misconceptions. And
yeah.
I hadn't been, I know I was anxious going, just always an anxious person, but I'd never been treated for it. I'd never been diagnosed. I thought it was actually like just a good personality trait to have. So right. I just, it's always encouraging to hear how other people were not informed. And it always just reminds me why the advocacy work and why things like the Climb Out of Darkness are so important.
Yes. Well, absolutely, because if you don't learn about it, then you're still stuck in the dark, and you can't help somebody if, you know, say your sister goes through it. You can't help her if you don't know what it's like. And if you go through it, you don't know you're going through it, because you just think, oh my God, I made a horrible mistake becoming a mother.
Oh yeah, your brain's been rewired. All your chemicals are firing in weird ass ways. So it's like I couldn't see I was depressed until I got onto the other side and the Zoloft kicked in. And then I could see in hindsight, oh, I was depressed.
Right.
But I could never see it in the present tense.
Exactly. Well, same for me, you know, during pregnancy. I didn't realize that I was until I'm a year away from it. And I'm realizing, oh man, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I see it now.
Yes.
But at the time, I chalked it up to everything else.
So you're going to be leading a climb this year?
I am, yes. I am so, so excited. It's my first time participating in a climb. So I thought, well, why don't I just lead one?
Right, why not? You
know, why not? Why not? So, yeah, I'm very excited. I'm still working to secure a venue, so that's been kind of stressful. Orlando is a huge, huge area, and the parks are in high demand. So I'm working with a local state park, so hopefully we can get the venue tied down soon. But it will be for the greater Orlando area. We are going to host it on Saturday, June 23rd. We're probably going to do a morning walk because Orlando, a little warm, especially in the middle of June. But it's going to be obviously family friendly, and I'm just super, super excited about spreading the word, spreading awareness. I actually have a Facebook group for anybody who wants to be a part of it, and it's just sharing a little bit about the event itself and about perinatal mood disorders, and it's literally called Climb Out of the Darkness Team Orlando. And I'm super pumped because I have 10 members on my team already, which is exciting.
That's awesome. I'm doing a climb, but I just haven't had the time to like,
yeah,
it's hard.
It's hard. It really is. And I thought, oh my God, it'll be so easy. No, it's not. And it's really hard because everybody wants to know, well, how many people are going to be at your climb? Well, freak man, I don't know. Well, you know, do you have blah, blah, blah? I don't know. This is the first time I've ever done it. I don't know how many people are going to be there. Hopefully 17 million people, but I don't think that's going to happen. So it's really been difficult getting all the logistics nailed down.
When I find myself getting in my head too much and worrying about it, I take a deep breath and I think about the suffragettes and how they had no idea how many people were going to, like, show up with pickets demanding the right to vote. They didn't know how it was going to evolve. They had no idea how it was going to even end. And, like, that's us. We're at the beginning. I mean, and this is, like, I hate to say we're at the beginning because there's so many people who have been working to raise awareness for, like, over 30 years. But we're finally really gaining some momentum here, thanks to, like, in larger part to social media. Mm-hmm. So it does feel like, yeah, we're at the it's not technically the beginning, but it feels like a beginning.
But it feels like it, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe there was no event like this, like, 5 years ago.
Right. Well, last year, I wanted to go to the Orlando event, but they actually ended up not having one. So I was, you know, finishing my maternity leave and interested in going and connecting with women like me, but there wasn't one. So I figured, okay, I'll do the one this year. And I'm super, super excited about it. Yeah, and like you said, it does feel like we're in the beginning, but it is so, so awesome to know that the work that we're doing is helping other people. Someone I went to college with recently posted on social media. I didn't see it. It didn't hit my newsfeed because I don't know how algorithms work, but apparently Facebook didn't want me to see it. And she had posted about, you know, hey, postpartum depression is real. And she just, it was like a one-liner, and a bunch of people started commenting, hey, we're here for you. Let me know if you need anything. And I had two people, independent of one another, post as a comment and say, hey, you should talk to Kelly. She talked about her experience, and they linked to, I had written a story, and it was picked up by the When the Bow Breaks Facebook group, or their Facebook page, and they had published it, and it got quite a bit of visibility. And so one person posted that story for her to read, and another person said, hey, Kelly's doing some work with the foundation. I don't know the name of it, but I know it exists. And I thought, oh my God, that's awesome. Because I don't care if you don't know the name PSI. The fact that you know something exists, the fact that you know as a single male without any, without a wife, without kids on the horizon, the fact that you know that something exists for women and families, that's awesome. Because you didn't know about it before. And maybe someday when you go to have a family, you will know the name of it. And you will know where to get help.
Or at least you know that it's a thing. And you know that helps out there. And Google will get you there really fast.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But even knowing that it's a thing, that postpartum depression is real, that's step one.
It is.
You know? So how cool that he knows that now. And this mom is getting help. She's already been to her doctor. She's on some medication. Things are going really, you know, in the right direction for her, which is really great.
Well, that's wonderful. I feel like we've covered a lot today, and I'll make sure the show notes have links for Team Orlando and maybe that Facebook post you just mentioned.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Is there anything else we should cover before we say goodbye to everyone?
I don't think so. Probably by the time this comes out, this will have come and gone, but this coming Monday, March 5th, I am doing a fundraiser night at a local Chipotle, so for anybody who's in the Orlando area, if it works out for time-wise for it to be included, great, but if not, you know, I'll have lots of pictures from that evening.
And just for anyone listening to know that Chipotle is really ridiculously easy for doing these fundraisers, and isn't it all online, I heard?
Yeah, it was online. I just went to their page and looked up, like, fundraiser nights, and I didn't have to talk to a person in real life, which was kind of nice because I did it all from my bed. And then 50% of the proceeds from every order will go to my team directly for Climb Out of the Darkness Orlando, and that will all go to PSI.
Well, that's awesome, and it's a delicious way to fundraise.
I know, right? And I posted yesterday, I said, if you like babies and burritos, come on down, because I'll have one of each.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
So that's it for this week. Kelly, thank you so much for coming on the show and being so brave and generous with your time to share your story. I love that we have now had a mom breastfeeding during the show. So just so that you moms out there who are listening and thinking that you would like to share your story, but you don't know if you can get perfect circumstances available, it's okay. It doesn't matter. You could have to breastfeed. We can take breaks to deal with babies, toddlers, even teenagers. And it's okay if there's dogs barking. I've done this with the lawnmower going crazy in the background. We are not striving perfection here. We are just striving to create an honest, authentic space where people can share their stories. Email me, Courtney@ppdadventures.com, if you'd like to share your story on a future episode. Go to ppdadventures.com if you want to sign up for the mailing list and get a free link for a free ebook when my book comes out for my memoir, which is also called Adventures with Postpartum Depression. Or go to ppdadventures.com also to get the show notes for this episode, which will have links to Team Orlando and Kelly's fundraising page for her climb, and more information about the climb out of the darkness, and links to the Facebook story Kelly published, all that good stuff, over at ppdadventures.com. Maternal mood disorders are very common, but they are incredibly isolating and can make you feel like you are the worst mother in the history of humanity. You are not. You are doing enough. You are good enough. And with help, you can and will make a full recovery. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful week.